On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we want to show you something beautiful as we look for Christian themes in Avengers Age of Ultron. What convinces Wanda and Pietro to leave Ultron's destructive path? Is it the grace that the Vision brings with him from out of the cradle? All that and more in 3, 2, 1... Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 75. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
That was James Spader.
Yes, very, yes. Very good.
Nose, right on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Brendan, what did we talk about last week?
Last week we took our first foray, well, in a while, to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
We did!
And we talked about Thor, favorite movie, Michael.
Yes!
Thor the Dark World.
In fact, people almost didn't even get to hear that episode. Because somebody in the studio forgot to record the audio.
And somebody on his way home that night almost had to pull over because that text message was so heavy.
So that is now your new job. At this point in the show, okay, right before addendums, afterthoughts, oh, and another thing, you say, are we actually recording this episode? Okay.
Okay, hold on. But Michael, are we actually recording this episode?
Right now we are.
Good. Okay.
Absolutely. And so what I did was, because we are also doing this video live in the studio, so you can always tune in. We'll give you all the particulars at the end of the show, but we're here about 4 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday afternoons. And we have the studio camera on. You can watch us performing and recording this podcast. Well, what I did was we did record that, which I'm not right now. I don't believe I am. Right now, let me check that as well.
I ask you if you are recording.
While we are checking all the recordings. Yes, I am recording that too. So what I did, Brendan, was I just downloaded that video.
Almost lost it again.
And then extracted the audio from the video.
Okay.
Put it through some magical engineerification. And voila, we had an episode number 70 Thor. Yes. So that's what I had to update people on from last episode. How about you?
Oh, Michael,
yeah.
When I got home that night, after the almost panic attack on the way in,
yes,
and after rehearsal that night for the Christmas show, more about that later. After that, you know, I'm looking up on YouTube, I'm getting ready to start doing the blog post, and I just had a hunch. I had a hunch.
Yes.
To look for some Thor Dark World deleted scenes.
Yes.
And Michael.
And there are about three of Thor.
Oh, stop. And Michael,
yes,
you could not have been more right.
What? Wait because, a second.
Hold on.
Can you say that again? My wife may be listening.
Michael, you could not have been more right when you said
yes.
What are you about to do?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I'm excited.
When
now.
You said you just never know what they leave on the cutting room floor.
Absolutely true.
Because I found this scene between Thor and Frigga. That should have been in the movie.
Oh.
I don't know why it wasn't.
Tell us more.
Oh, tell us.
I've seen
Thor?
It.
Thor?
Yeah, tell us Thor, please.
Well, it was just a scene. Let's see, when did it take place? It started after Loki's
she
been
brought,
put in the cell.
And she brought Loki the books.
Exactly. Well, her illusion did.
Yes.
Her trickery. Her facade, you know, whatever you want to call it, that form of her brought the books to Loki. And then, you know, Loki tries to hold her hands, but then she disintegrates.
Right.
That's where the movie ends it. But in this deleted scene, he touches her hands, and there's that moment where they actually meet eyes again before she disintegrates, and you can tell they're both not happy. But then we cut to the real Frigga.
I'm sensing some deeper things about to take place.
Oh yeah, because Thor shows up.
Ah,
and Thor and Frigga, number four. They have this little. They just have a little conversation about you know Loki really just needs some guidance. He's hurting right now because Odin has actually betrayed him in a sense, yeah. And you know this needs to happen. You're his brother. Do what you need to do. And Thor's like, you know, Mom, I agree. Why wasn't that in the movie?
Yeah, it would have added a lot to the dynamic.
It would have.
The drama.
Yes.
All right.
To the deeper things.
Well, and exactly. So, folks, for a more concise, thorough discussion on the deeper things, refer back to episode number 70, Thor. Thor favorite movie? The Dark World. And you'll get all that. All right. Anything else on that episode? No, wait. Hold on while I open up this sound cart here real quick, Brendan. Didn't have anything. Well, I should have told you that the digital copy that I purchased in order to watch the movie, to review for the show last week, mm-hmm. had all kinds of specials.
Of course.
Added features and things. And
of course it did.
Was there were plenty of deleted scenes that all should have been in the film. They were all great. In fact, this film that we're going to talk about today, the digital copy also has deleted scenes that should have been in the film.
Man, we'll what is Marvel doing?
A little bit more about that later on in the show, but what are we talking about?
We are talking about the cap, the climax, the resolution of Phase 2.
Yes.
We are talking about Avengers Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, let's go!
I was designed to save the world. People will look to the sky and see hope. I'll take that from them first. There's only one path to peace. Their extinction.
I tried to create a suit of armor around the world, but I created something terrible.
Artificial intelligence.
It's called the Ultron Program.
I'm sick of watching people pay for our mistakes.
Isn't why we fight so we can end the fight and go home?
Well, you amazingly failed.
Here we all are. With nothing but our wit and our will to save the world. So stand and fight.
No way we all get through this.
I got no plans tomorrow night.
I'm always picking up after you boys.
We can tear them apart. From the inside.
That's the best you can do!
You had to ask.
Big movie.
And can I just say,
please,
I am so glad that you did not use a trailer that had that awful song in it.
What awful song?
I got no strength to hold me down.
Hey, it's a Disney product, property.
Whatever. Yeah. It was Marvel before it was Disney.
Well, all right.
Let's be honest.
Let's just be honest about it.
But let's be honest about this movie, though.
Please.
Was it not good?
I loved it.
Oh, it was so good.
I loved it. I loved watching it in the theater, and I can remember coming out and reading people saying, "Oh, what a disappointment! It wasn't anything near as good as the first one."
And Michael, I was one of those people.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
I don't remember your Monday movie review.
Well, I just I remember feeling shortchanged.
Okay,
but I think, and what I started to notice is that I myself and a lot of people, we all like to get excited about something because we've been longing for it for so long. and we started to have these expectations about it.
That nothing and can then, live up to.
And exactly.
Right.
So when we finally get to that experience, to watching the movie, we're let down.
Right.
And that's what it was for me with this film, because when I came out of the theater, I was like, man, there could have been so much more. But now watching it again, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I have to say that it's more memorable. Now, perhaps it's because I've just been watching it for this episode. But to me, it's more memorable on a personal level, on the deeper things. We learn more about the characters. We get into their heads more. We get into their hearts more.
I was just going to reiterate the fact that we do get into their heads more.
Because, literally, yes.
Because of a particular character. Yeah.
And that is very revealing. It's a bigger movie. It's almost like there is, I'll tell you what I'm glad that wasn't in this film.
Okay.
The alien invasion, you know, epic scale of the first Avengers movie.
Okay.
Okay, because that reminded me that was venturing into Transformers territory. You know, the Transformer movies where they're just over the top action.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the first Avengers film and I loved that alien invasion.
Right.
I just didn't want it to repeat that same formula in this one. And this was more, even though there were a ton of Ultron, you know, little robots and stuff and
Ultron Juniors.
Yes. But the thing is that Ultron was everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You destroy one, you know, robot that he is speaking through at that moment, and immediately there's another one. It's like that scene.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, where he has Black Widow captured, and he's talking to her, and then all of a sudden his head explodes, but his voice keeps coming because immediately, you know, he was in another robot, destroyed the one that was just speaking, you know, to show that I'm everywhere.
Yeah.
And that is a little more creepy to me.
Well, I mean, it's just easier to understand Ultron not as a single, like a entity, a form, but he's an operating system. He's an OS.
Yes, but even more than that, because he has elements of the Mind Stone, mm-hmm. one of the Infinity Stones, yes. in him.
Something above creation,
yes.
something outside it,
something...
Other.
Ah, with a capital O.
Yes.
And what I really love about this is he is Dr. Bruce Banner, when he first sees the results of Jarvis, what happened to Jarvis, he says, this isn't cunning or whatever word he says. This is rage.
Yeah, this is rage.
And there's a madness to Ultron.
Yeah.
So much so that when he cuts off Andy Serkis's arm, mm-hmm. he says, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure that'll be fine. You know, he can't control his own anger.
Right.
And when you see that played so brilliantly through, who I'm so happy to be able to say now, FCC's very own James Spader.
Yes, sir. Are we starting the shout-outs now?
Let's go ahead.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Okay.
Because I didn't know that he was actually doing the motion capture for Ultron.
Oh, you just thought it was the voice?
Yeah, I thought he was just voicing. They just called him. I thought that they just called this guy into the studio. They were lucky to get him on the project at all. Hey, just come into the studio. We have these lines for you to read, and you'll be on your way. No, he performed with the help of Andy Serkis.
As the mocap...
Right.
Captain.
But also with the help of Mark Ruffalo, because yeah. he now is also, you know, he's been working with Andy Serkis.
Because of Hulk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it was, in fact, in the special features, they're interviewing Mark Ruffalo, and he says, and here I am. I'm working with James Spader, and we're wearing these goofy things, you know, these mocap suits, and we're looking ridiculous, but I'm working with James Spader. He says, I'm just thinking, Ruffalo, you fooled them all, didn't you? Here you are. Which is a very humble attitude to have, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
You know, and I love that.
One thing that I liked in the build-up to this movie being released is, of course, you know, all the stars are going to all the different talk shows, uh-huh. building up the hype. And like you see, James Spader, he would talk about actually working in the mocap suit. You know, he was on... the late night talk shows, you know, also like Regis and Kelly or whatever,
whatever,
you know, just, and just hearing them, and then also hearing Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, everyone talking about what it was like working with each other again. And especially the addition of James Spader.
Yes. Yes.
And a little more from Paul Bettany.
Yes, finally.
Can we talk about Paul Bettany?
Please do.
He's been in on it. And okay, and I just read this recently. Paul Bettany, in Joss Whedon's mind, and I guess maybe even Kevin Feige's mind, was always supposed to be the Vision.
Ah!
Because they knew that from Jarvis would come Vision,
yeah,
that same actor's voice. The only thing was, Paul Bettany did not know that. And he thought his career in Marvel Cinematic Universe was only Jarvis.
Yes.
So when it was this interview, he was saying he was like sitting out on the sidewalk one day, and he just got off the phone with another producer saying that his career was over because of something. And I don't know what that producer said. He can just go on somewhere. He needs to get out of here with that negativity. Pretty much as soon as he hangs up that phone call, and he said he's wondering, what am I going to do with my life? Here comes Joss Whedon, and he says, "Hey, so do you want like an actual role in the new Avengers movie?" And he says, "Yes,
please."
Oh, and so it's just, I'm glad we can now officially say, "Wait, could we have said it before?" Paul Bettany.
I don't know.
I can't think of right now.
Yeah, we haven't done an Iron Man movie,
right?
Oh no, well, because we did Avengers, he had to be in the first Avengers.
But did we talk about it that much?
No.
He, well, in that, even in that film, he wasn't that much of a presence,
right? Right.
As Jarvis. So, but now we can officially say, if we couldn't before, we can now officially say FCC's very own Paul Bettany.
Yes,
I'm so happy.
I know, and I love what they did with his character as Vision, because they, you know, obviously it's him. Right, and they did makeup on him and prosthetics and everything. He just couldn't hear for the longest time. He could not hear anybody, so they actually did poke some holes in the things that are covering his ears.
Yeah.
But they took him, then they laid CGI over him
on top of him,
and then they put him back over on top of the CGI. So it really, next time when you're looking at Vision, just notice there's something, because they were talking about the Uncanny Valley, and which goes into our discussion a little bit. Around the time of Ex Machina, we were talking about the Uncanny Valley, and that is where, when robotics and androids get to, the closer they get to looking human, the further away they get from it, because it's the human mind just says something is wrong.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so there's something a little uncanny about... Okay. The Vision.
I could tell that.
Yeah.
I didn't know what they were doing.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah, okay. And it's really neat how it all blends together.
You see, kids, it pays to look at the special features.
Yes. To be interested in such things. And, okay, so let's start off. Let's just go down the list. Let's end up with the twins, because that'll be...
perfect.
Yes. So here we go. Robert Downey Jr.
Of course.
As Tony Stark.
What are you going to do?
Yes.
What are you going to do? He's great.
He is... Tony Stark.
He is Tony Stark, as
yes.
you said. Yes,
and I mean, we've talked about him before. He's great. Last week, we talked about Chris Hemsworth. This movie, this takes place after Thor's favorite movie, The Dark World, right?
It takes place after, but not all the way, like it's not immediately after.
Right, okay. So Thor has already relinquished, you know, the throne, or refused the throne,
mm-hmm.
and he is working to maintain order in the Nine Realms.
Right.
And so he's even more mature. That's what I'm noticing about Thor, and that's what I really focus on the character of Thor. So,
I think at this time, too, and I only say this because Dark World is still fresh, but I think he's focusing only on Midgard.
Yeah.
Our realm.
Hey, you know what I was going to say last week? Can I do a little aside here real quick?
Sure.
Midgard is the same word that Tolkien derived Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Yes. And Middle Earth and Midgard both mean, they only refer to the realm of men. It's where men dwell, is Middle Earth. And that comes from Norse. You know, Midgard is Norse and Norse word, Old Norse or Old English, I think.
But, like Old Anglo-Saxon.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so that's pretty neat. So I like that tie-in because it goes, hey, now we have Thor. Hey, and that actually ties into a voicemail that we got later on a little bit.
Oh, it does.
Okay, so.
Well, then wait, what is Asgard? Does Tolkien talk about Asgard?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Or have any reference?
No. Yeah, okay. All right. Off the top of my head, no. Okay. Mark Ruffalo, which I've always said Ruffalo, because I thought,
I've heard what I believe to be authoritative sources use both.
Okay. Well, I heard him say Ruffalo.
He says Ruffalo?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we'll say Ruffalo.
In that anecdote that I mentioned earlier, he says verbatim, Ruffalo, you've really fooled him this time, haven't you?
I think he did that for a reason. Yeah. So he would know.
I didn't realize we talked about this last episode. I didn't realize that the Edward Norton Hulk film from 2008, I didn't realize that that was part of Phase 1. And so it's kind of strange to change an actor so dramatically. But now, you know, Mark Ruffalo is Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner. Yeah.
And the in the special features talking about the motion capture has advanced even from the last Avengers movie. And so now it is so amazing, and it's all being done in real time. And, you know, you can really see Mark's face in the Hulk the better now, I think. And the way that he's acting, the emotion that he's portraying, even when he's in, you know, in Hulk mode, good stuff.
When it's a code green.
Yes. Hey, big guy.
Oh, Sun's Scarlett Johansson.
Low. What about her?
Oh, I'm so glad. And I really like that they're pursuing this romantic thing between the Hulk and Black Widow.
Yep.
Their scene up in the bedroom at Hawkeye's place.
Yep. There is an extended version of that scene.
Yeah. Oh, I got to look at it.
It is very endearing. I loved the scene at the bar, at the party.
Yes.
Where it's all real, like, film noir looking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like total, like, Casablanca.
Right.
You know, I thought that was, she played that to, you know, perfectly. Everything about their chemistry. Their chemistry is great. And it started back at, the beginning of Avengers.
Yeah.
When
she goes into that tent.
Fury sends her to get him. And her portray. Conveying the fear that she, you know, she doesn't just march up to the Hulk.
Right.
No, I mean, nobody does. You know, even, you know, when she's reaching out to him, she's waiting for, you know, he could snap.
Yep.
Great, great stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a real throwback to King Kong, Faye Dunaway. And I mean, the newer version with Jack Black in it.
Who was the girl?
I can't remember her name. She's a famous actress.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Anyway.
We won't do that movie because we have Kong Skull Island coming out pretty soon with Loki.
With Tom Tiddlywinks.
Yes. With Hank Williams.
Senior.
Yes. Okay.
He wasn't even in the movie for that long, but Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Of course. Typical, you know, goldmine Nick Fury.
Yep.
Let's move on.
Well, and also Samuel L. Jackson, he's another one of those actors. He's on screen. Okay, I feel confident. You know, I'm comfortable. I know that, you know, this is going to be handled. He's got he's got wide shoulders. You know what I mean? He can carry. He can carry stuff. Don Cheadle.
Oh, and I'm boom. Like, boom, you look at this? It's like, well, why don't we even talk to you guys?
Why don't we even talk to you guys? But then when he tells it the next time and everybody, the look of satisfaction he gets on his face is great.
He gets the boom, look at this. Everyone busts out laughing. Yeah, and then the camera and then the camera pans in closer just to single him out.
Yes.
And he's got that self-affirming nod.
Yes. He played that. Beautifully,
it's so good. And then once the last battle starts happening, with Ultron, with the Ultron army and the city's flying.
Yeah,
he comes in. He's like, "All right, guys, I got this." And then Vision comes out, and Don Cheadle, he just okay. What?
Well, see, the problem is I haven't seen Iron Man 3. See, and that's where you find out War Machine and.
Have you seen any of them?
Yeah.
No, War Machine comes out in 2.
Oh, with Mickey, what's his name?
Mickey Rourke.
Yeah. Oh, see, I watched that movie, but I don't know if I liked it that much because I don't remember anything about it.
There was a little buildup of War Machine. It wasn't all the way there yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I need to see Iron Man 3. I think that'll get me caught up on all the Marvel movies. I don't know. Kobe Smulders as Maria Hill. She doesn't do anything for me.
She's okay. She's hilarious in How I Met Your Mother, a TV show.
Okay, well. But in this role, there's just something that's just... There's nothing there. I don't know. So that's not a shout out.
Well, she's kind of like Nick Fury's, you know, right-hand man.
Well, woman. All I know is that I love Anthony Mackie as Falcon. And I'm so happy that they have built up the next Avengers team.
Yeah.
You know, with Vision. Falcon, he's great. I loved him the first encounter between he and Captain America.
Right.
You know, on your left.
Running laps around. On your left. Oh, come on.
Yes. It's great. That's great stuff. And then him in his little cameo in Ant-Man. Yes. Yep. Good stuff.
Thank you, Marvel Cinematic Universe, for being unified.
Yes. And thank you for the levity
that
you interject, because it's always so perfectly timed and well-placed and whatnot. But I was happy to see Haley Atwell in the cameo in Captain America's
In his little dream. Hallucination.
Yes.
Yeah. Michael.
Huh.
Speaking of those hallucinations.
Yes.
Are we ready?
What?
For the Maximoff twins?
Oh. Well, we did have Idris Elba in his cameo.
We did. Oh yeah, he was in Thor's.
Yes.
And Stellan Skarsgård.
Yes.
Let us delve briefly to the Asgardian hot tub.
Yeah.
To the underground jacuzzi.
Okay, which the deleted scenes makes sense. You understand what that scene is. And I'm not even going to go through it. That's not what we're here for on this episode. Just encourage everybody to get the special features and watch the deleted scenes of the Asgardian hot tub. Stan Lee and his cameo. He wasn't able to hold his liquor, and neither were any of his Normandy Beach pals.
That was so funny.
Yes.
Excelsior.
Andy Serkis.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about FCC's
very own Andy Serkis. This is a nice cameo.
You know he'll be back.
He will? As?
Michael. Oh, okay, I'm not going to get into this. I need Michael to go. I need Michael to go into his own underground jacuzzi, have a vision of when Andy Serkis is going to come back.
Okay.
Because let's be honest, you cannot have that big of an actor for such a small role who ends up getting his arm chopped off and would, you know, possibly need it mechanically replaced for a later story in the Marvel.
Not Cyborg.
No.
Okay. But, okay. No.
Well, no, because Cyborg would mean that his whole body gets replaced.
Well, you never know what happened at that factory after everybody cleared out because that after his encounter with the twins. No, I don't want to stop it. Okay, so here come the twins who were once married. What? That's a sin.
That's weird.
Oh, but that was in Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. Different film. Different film company.
So,
different production studio.
Our Quicksilver. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. And I can't remember his character's name was it Brody or something? Godzilla?
I can't remember.
He was the son of Breaking Bad.
Of Walter White.
Walter White. FCC's very own.
Yeah. Bryan Cranston.
Yes. And I just wasn't impressed with him in that movie.
Godzilla.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what it was. But in this film, I loved him. Do you want to talk? There's some kind of controversy?
We can because
Quicksilver controversy.
Oh, it's not a controversy because there's really no contest.
Oh,
because you can't compare two things that are apples and oranges.
Okay, to fill everybody in.
Last night, you know, I asked the question on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Levi the Believer, or you can just follow FCC at Christ in Cinema. Put out a little poll there, asking which Quicksilver is better. Evan Peters from X-Men Days of Future Past or Aaron Taylor Johnson from this film, Avengers Age of Ultron. And not to compare the two, but the general response was that Evan Peters' portrayal of Quicksilver was much more enjoyable and much more memorable. And I would say, yes, I do agree. However, I say they're completely different because in X-Men, Days of Future Past, Quicksilver was that levity. It was the levity in the film. And Michael, I showed you the scene.
Yeah, that clip. Because yeah. I hadn't seen that. I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, but did you not just like feel good after that?
Oh, yeah, that's great. I wish they had done something like that in this film. Yeah.
Well, there wasn't much room for levity in this film, though. Yeah. There was.
Well, especially the story of the twins and what is driving them. Yeah.
Yeah, because in this film, Quicksilver and Wanda.
Yes.
Pietro and Wanda.
Maximoff.
Their backstory, their reason for being involved with Ultron at first is because they're mad at Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the Stark missiles that blew up their building.
That's right. That's right. In fact, let's get a little picture. Want to hear a little picture of the real state that they're in? It's fine for me to play this right now.
Okay.
Here we go.
We're 10 years old, having dinner, the four of us. And the first shell hits two floors below. It makes a hole in the floor. It's big. Our parents go in. The whole building starts coming apart. I grab her. Roll under the bed and the second shell hits, but it doesn't go off. It just sits there in the rubble, 3 feet from our faces. And on the side of the shell, it's painted one word. Stark. We were trapped for 2 days.
Every effort to save us, every shift in the bricks, I think, this will set it off. We wait for 2 days for Tony Stark to kill us.
They know what they are.
I wondered why only you two survived Strucker's experiments. Now I don't. We will make it right. You and I can hurt them. But you will tear them apart.
I have a feeling that's a much different character than in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Very much so. Very much so. Not a lot of room for levity with Quicksilver in this film.
Right.
And I think Aaron Taylor Johnson as an actor carried it very well.
Yes. Yes.
As well as Elizabeth Olsen carrying Wanda.
And she is fantastic in this movie because whereas Pietro is just as hurt, he is able to focus that on things. In fact, he's the one of the two because he's able to help her to, hey, we're going to go over here now. We're going to do this. She is almost crippled by this pain that she has in her. And Elizabeth Olsen is able to convey that so well. And I love, and this is how I know, because Ultron just said at the end of that clip to Pietro, you and I can hurt them. She's gonna tear them apart.
Huh. And don't you think it's interesting that we always see the image of Pietro carrying Wanda?
Yes.
Because if he didn't carry her like he does in this film, not only physically, but emotionally, spiritually, morally, if he didn't carry her, she would be left behind.
Well, and we find that all the way up until a certain point in this film, she is paralyzed. She is paralyzed by pain and by hurt. And so this just is a great segue for me to get into my point. Is that okay to launch into that?
Yep. Oh, certainly.
And my segment is called Redeeming the Scarlet Witch or Under the Wing of Hawkeye.
Oh.
So we know her story. We know that she spent days, in abject fear of Tony Stark, because his missile is stuck in the ground, right next to her and her brother, 3 feet away, afraid of any movement, shifting rubble from this building that partially collapsed from Tony Stark. Any movement will cause that one to explode, and then they're dead, too.
Mm-hmm.
That is fear. And that describes the state of humanity in many cases. The fear of the fear of death, the fear of destruction. Well, she focuses her and her brother on Stark. It's his. This is his. He did it. And by extension now, the Avengers, because they work with them. You know, and he's a murderer, and it's kind of like what we got from the very first Iron Man when he's out there in the Middle East, and they captured him, the terrorist, because you are a murderer. But he wasn't involved in any of that stuff. That's his dad. You know, Tony Stark likes to build cool stuff and you know, figure out how to power the world for free, and he wants to figure out how to save the world.
How to put a shield, a suit of armor around the world.
Peace.
Peace in our time.
Imagine peace in our time. Wow. But this is also another story I'm going to tell you right off the bat, friends, because this goes in with our series that we've been working on, Kindness Leading to Repentance. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
60% of the time, it works every time. What's that, a little hat tip, too? Don't say it. Anyway.
Oh, I know.
And so they, the twins, go and they work for Ultron. And here he is in this, you know, in the church, in the center of this town that he's going to end up turning into a meteor. That's basically what this is, because he talks about extinction mm-hmm. constantly through this movie. And then we finally find out, oh, he was serious. He wants to cause an extinction event. And it's this big city that he's raising up into the sky. But you know, before that even happens, he has the twins working. And they are working for him because they are under the belief that his goal is to destroy the extinction of the Avengers. No, that's not true. It's global extinction. Well, we have a mess here. We got let's listen to what this clip is. I don't even remember what this clip is, but hopefully it's going to help me along here.
You know, I totally support your avenging. I couldn't be prouder. But I see those guys, those gods.
You don't think they need me?
I think they do. Which is a lot scarier. They're a mess.
Yeah, I guess they're my mess.
The most important character of the film, Clint Barton, Hawkeye.
Arguably the most important character of the
film. So, Ultron already said, you and I, we're going to hurt him. She's going to tear him apart. And she's already begun, because she's gotten into their heads, into the heads of the Avengers, right? All you listeners, you've seen this. In fact, I should have done... If you haven't watched this movie yet, it will be spoiled by the time that we get done, if not already. So she started tearing them apart. The Avengers are at their safe house, which is at Hawkeye's home, his hidden home with his hidden family that Nick Fury helped set up, get off the grid. I mean, it's not even known. So it's truly a safe place to go. But his wife is saying, you know, I'm pregnant. We're going to be outnumbered soon. You know, are you sure that this is going to be okay? Well, you don't think that I stack up to these guys. No, I think that they need you because they're a mess. And I just love what Clint's response is. Yeah, but they're my mess. Takes ownership, and that's brotherly love, mm-hmm. right? Because remember, we already set up in when we talked about Avengers, the first film, what was that, episode 30 or something?
Episode 50.
Yeah, maybe 50. And that was with special guest stars.
The Theonauts!
I made, you know, we were talking about the Avengers as the church, mm-hmm. right? Over and over again. So you'll want to go back and listen to that episode as well. So they're in this mess. Everything's bad. But Clint's here. Barton. Agent Barton. And he does a great job throughout this film. And let's do a little sidebar here and talk about the character development of Hawkeye. Since the last Avengers film. We didn't know anything about him in the first film,
We barely.
Yeah.
We barely saw him on screen.
He was kind of like just a third wheel.
Yeah.
You know? And now we're getting more about who he is and what makes him tick. And you know what? He just wants to go and do his job
mm-hmm.
and come home and finish the sunroom or whatever for his wife.
Knock out that east wall.
Yes, yep. Make some room, makes a nice home for his wife and kids. That's mm-hmm. all he wants to do. And that's what his job is. That's why he is an Avenger, because he wants a safe spot. He wants his family to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's where we're at. But the Ultron with his madness, he reveals a little more about himself than he intends to. And as he has captured that nice Korean doctor lady who's a super genius.
Dr. Cho.
Yes, and she is creating a body for Ultron. He doesn't want to be in these mechanical structures anymore. He wants
these strings.
Yes, he wants to be in that body, and this body is going to be amazing because he has the Mind Stone. And with that, he can accomplish everything that he has his little fat mechanical heart set on, right?
And, which we see later in the film.
But here's where something, this is where it all falls apart for him. This is the point where it all falls apart as he's sitting there next to what they call, what do they call it? The, not the casket.
The cradle.
The cradle that's not holding.
Death. Life.
Yes. The cradle that's holding the Vision. Because Ultron calls him my Vision, right? It's his vision of the future. It's holding the Vision. And Ultron sitting in the chair next to him with a data dump plugged into the back of his head, and it's just taking his brain and putting it into the Vision. Yep. So he's not even conscious really of what's going on in the Vision's body.
Right.
Well, for the first time, the Scarlet Witch now gets a fix. Wanda is able to look inside the mind of Ultron.
I can read him. He's dreaming.
I wouldn't call it dreams. It's Ultron's base consciousness. Informational noise. Soon.
How soon? I'm not being pushy.
We're imprinting a physical brain. There are no shortcuts, even if you're magic gem. Could you?
How could I what?
You said we would destroy the Avengers, make a better world.
It will be better.
When everyone is dead.
That is not. The human race will have every opportunity to improve.
And if they don't?
Ask Noah.
You're a madman.
There are more than a dozen extinction-level events before even the dinosaurs got theirs. When the Earth starts to settle, God throws a stone at it, and believe me, he's winding up.
She understands now, and she understands that she has made a big mistake, and so does Pietro. Let's not neglect that. This is not what we signed up for. To us, good was dealing with Tony Stark, who has murdered so many people, and the Avengers who are working for him. That's how they see things. That's how the world is divided up between them. Tony Stark is bad and evil, and he kills people, lots of them, including our parents and nearly us. But now we see that you are wanting to destroy everybody. Can see into your mind, this is not what we signed up for. We're repenting of that. We're still zealots, still very zealous of our cause, right? But now we see that you need to be stopped. And so once the Scarlet Witch discovers Ultron's true plans, the twins turn to fight against him. The very next scene is this runaway train where we have this chase going on to get the cradle, to get the body of Vision, the Vision body. And you got Jim Barton in a plane, and you got Black Widow is trying to get the, all well-mannered frivolity is taking place.
Yeah.
And it ends up we have Ultron and Captain America fighting on a runaway train. And they're just going at it.
Yeah.
And props to Captain America, because he can really put up a fight, that guy.
Well, he was worthy enough to move the hammer
half
an inch.
I love the look on Thor's face.
Yes.
But anyway, anybody that could be on a speeding motorcycle and it at the same time flip over the handlebars and throw the motorcycle and blow up a tank or a Jeep or whatever it was. He can fight a robot. So anyway, they're fighting, but out of nowhere, here comes the twins.
Yeah.
And Captain America, Steve Rogers says to Pietro Quicksilver, hey, can you clear the civilians out of the way of this runaway train? And yes, I can. I can run faster than this runaway train. No problem. And he's and pushing people out of the way and stuff. And he turns to the Scarlet Witch and he doesn't punch her. He doesn't throw his shield at her. He doesn't kick her. He doesn't even scream at her. He says, can you stop this train? I love that. I find that to be very poignant. No cross words at all. Hey, you can do something that's going to help people. Can you stop this train? Mm-hmm. And she's, yes, I can. And the twins work together to save everybody on that train, as well as the people that were in the path of the train, right? So without hesitation, he asks the Scarlet Witch if she can stop the train with her powers. And he needs her abilities to save countless lives. And he doesn't let the past get in the way at this moment, right? Mm-mm. He is indeed, think about this, he's showing kindness. She's tried to kill him. She's gotten to his head.
Mm-hmm.
She's put, you know, bad things in his head, tried to tear the Avengers apart. He's the boss of the Avengers. He's the leader. But he shows her kindness. He is indeed showing kindness, the same kind that we talked about in Return of the Jedi, that we talked about in Back to the Future. And this kind of kindness leads to repentance. Now, remember, she's fighting against Ultron right now, but that doesn't mean that she's pro-Avengers. Okay? That just means the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
I was about to say.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, after all this, the train is stopped, and the Scarlet Witch is concerned about only one thing, and that's the cradle. And what does Steve say? Oh, no problem. Tony's got it. She says, that is the problem. That is the problem. Mm-hmm. And it harkens back. So what you have to do, listeners, is when you're watching this again, is pay attention to the first time that she gets in Stark's head. And after that vision, the look on her face. Because she was, I think she was truly startled and on a level started to understand Tony Stark a little bit better. And say, wait a second, I think that might have been a first turning point. Because the look on her face, to me, conveyed that she was almost sad for what he saw, because he takes everything on his own shoulders. The fate of the world is on his shoulders. The fate of the Avengers, his friends, is on his shoulders, and so much so that we find out it's revealed in this movie. You know, to Nick Fury, you know, Nick Fury says, and the problem is that you didn't die with them. And that weight was weighing heavy on Tony. And she knows that. Mm-hmm. And so now when Steve Rogers says, hey, no problem, Tony's got it, it's fine. No, that's not fine. You right. don't understand. He will do anything to save the world. That tells a lot about Tony Stark.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that interplay. And that. So you keep that in mind, too.
Well even right after that moment, she says, Ultron doesn't care. Ultron can't tell the difference between saving the world and destroying it. Where do you think he got that?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Also, can I interject real quick?
Please.
Again, I think this initial kindness that Pietro and Wanda see from the Avengers. Now, granted, it's not from all of them, but it's from Captain America. He's their representative to these two new characters. And his only concern is saving people's lives. Mm-hmm. He says, you go save these lives out there. Wanda, you save the lives in here.
Yes.
And from that point, they can see that at least one Avenger does value human life.
Yes.
And that's
and we didn't think that was the case.
Right.
Kindness leading to repentance. And Steve Rogers is kindness to civilians, people they don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And that bonded them. Great observation. Excellent observation. And then, of course, you know, so add that to what I was saying. We can see that all along, Wanda has been motivated by doing, quote, good.
Mm-hmm.
She has just been blinded by pain and grief and misinformation. The twins were zealous for the wrong thing, and they are like Saul turned Paul. aren't they?
Yes, sir.
I could see a great parallel there. That's something that you can point out to your friends when you're watching. Boy, they're just like Saul. They thought they were doing everything for the right reasons, mm-hmm. but they were persecuting the wrong people. Okay, and so then right after that, to piggyback even more, now they get back to the Stark Tower, or Avengers Tower, as it's now called, and they have the body of the Vision, and here comes this big old fight. Nobody wants to trust. Why are they even here? Right? Mm-hmm. And that also is like Paul, because when Paul was first converted and then goes back, hey, everybody, you know, blah, blah, blah. People are going, get away from me. You're a murderer. Right? Mm-hmm. He had to go. That's why he had to, you know, that's why he had to go. You go and preach to the Gentiles because they don't know you. You know, right. And so that also reminds me of Luke chapter 9, verses 49 through 50.
The Nilt version.
Yes, sir. New Living Translation. John said to Jesus, Master, we saw someone using your name to cast out demons, but we told him to stop because he isn't in our group. But Jesus said, don't stop him. Anyone who is not against you is for you. Right? Mm-hmm. We saw what these people are doing. These two, they destroyed our minds, man. Did you see what they did to the Hulk? She did to the Hulk? He leveled a city.
Yep.
No. They're with us now. They're with us, and they're in the process of repenting. You know, they are still, even at this moment, we're fighting Ultron. That's what we're doing. We're not with these guys. We're fighting Ultron. And we see the good that they do. Okay, so let's get this, you know, wrapped up. It was after the birth of Vision that they were assimilated into the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
They were given things to do, right. Missions to do, all these things in order to fight for good. And it all culminates near the end of the fight on this flying city. And we get back to the greatest character in this film.
Arguably so.
Hawkeye. And Hawkeye and the Scarlet Witch are holed up together momentarily, trying to catch a breath, trying to figure out what the next plan, well, at least, you know, Agent Barton, that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at Wanda, and he's got to have a serious heart-to-heart with this girl.
How can I let this happen?
Hey, you okay? Hey, look at me. It's your fault. It's everyone's fault. Who cares? Are you up for this? Are you? Look, I just need to know because the city is flying. Okay, look, the city is flying. We're fighting an army of robots. And I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense. But I'm going back out there because it's my job. Okay, and I can't do my job and babysit.
Doesn't matter what you did, what you were.
If you go out there, you fight, and you fight to kill. Stay in here, you're good. I'll send your brother to come find you, but if you step out that door, you are an Avenger.
It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you're going to do. And if you want to stay here, that's fine. I'll find your brother and send him here. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But
he's fast enough to come pick you up.
Yes.
You won't miss anything.
Nobody will know anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And that's the kind of person that he is. Mm-hmm. And hey, big props. We didn't do a shout out.
Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Yes.
Makes me want to watch that other movie where he's that reporter or whatever that brought down the
Kill the Messenger.
Yes.
Yes. We need to watch that.
Okay. Yeah. This is a fantastic exchange. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Would that be a monologue? Because she's really not participating.
It's a monologue.
Okay. And so it doesn't matter, Wanda. I don't care. It doesn't matter what you you've done. It all is forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
But know this. If you step out that door, you are an Avenger. You're part of the team. You have, hearkening back to our last Avengers episode, suit up. I had all these texts here. I just want to get cut right to the chase. this is your double. I mean, that, well, that's your acorn moment. That right there, that little speech is your acorn moment. So that when you are sitting on your
double decker couch
with your buddies watching Avengers: Age of Ultron, which was just released on home video, you are watching this with your friends, and you're going to watch it a bunch more times. You can point to that, and your key text is Galatians chapter 3, verse 27 out of the New Living Translation. And all who have been united with Christ in baptism have put on Christ. Suit up, like putting on new clothes. You will take off your old clothes, Wanda. When you step out that door, you are wearing the uniform of an Avenger.
You are wearing the wedding clothes.
Yes.
For the banquet.
For the marriage feast.
Mm-hmm.
Suit up. Or don't. But know that all is forgiven. All is forgiven. So are you going to accept that? Are you going to step out and put on the new clothes of Christ? Are you going to put on the marriage supper clothes? Wow. The redemption of the Scarlet Witch, man, is a powerful moment, a powerful thread in this film. It's one that you can easily use in order to share the gospel with your friends and loved ones as you watch Avengers: Age of Ultron. Anything that you want to add to that? I mean, did I present that in a cohesive way?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
And I'm going to piggyback on that.
Okay.
With my point. You talk about all is forgiven. You talk about this weight being lifted off the Maximoff twins. You're talking about grace.
Yes.
you're talking about grace.
How redemption and grace, they go together?
Oh, I think so.
Like peanut butter and jelly, baby.
This is just my subjective opinion.
Okay.
But yes, I think they do. So let's talk about Ultron really quick. Again, let's go back to the main baddie, main bad guy. Ultron, the Accuser.
Yes.
He has a case against the Avengers.
He is also Satan, isn't he?
He has a case against humanity.
Yes.
From his very moment of his inception. His conception, inception, whatever it is. Whenever he and Jarvis are doing their
Inception.
Thing,
we covered that. You want to do that again?
We should, yes.
Okay.
It'd be like a dream within a dream.
Yes.
Within a dream.
It'd be a podcast within a podcast.
Ooh.
Or we could go three layers.
Ooh. Break that wall.
Yes.
Anyway, Ultron has a case against the rest of humanity. And it's a pretty good case. As we can, we can hear it in this first sound clip.
I'm sorry, I know you mean well. You just didn't think it through. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. How is humanity saved if it's not allowed to evolve? With these puppets. There's only one path to peace. The Avengers extinction.
Now, first his mission, I believe, is to solely take out the Avengers. But as he becomes more and more of what he is,
yeah,
then
as he comes into his own.
Yes, then his vision.
Yeah, indeed.
Then his vision encompasses all of humanity, not just the Avengers, not just the S.H.I.E.L.D. team, not just them, but all of humanity. He believes that change and evolution is good because it means growth, and it means moving towards something better. He further believes that the Avengers are stunting that growth by trying to keep the peace, by trying to accomplish that peace in our time.
Peace and quiet are not the same thing.
Ooh. He thinks they're stunning that growth by Tony Stark putting that shield of armor around the world. He thus concludes that the only way to obtain true peace is to destroy the Avengers and then ultimately the rest of humanity and let the world evolve. Like I said in one of the sound clips, there were many extinction-causing events even before the dinosaurs. And he says, every time the earth starts to settle down, God winds up and or God throws a stone. He throws a mind stone.
Oh,
is that more on that later? And I can tell you right now, he's winding up. Okay, break from the point real quick. Did you notice how much religious language?
Oh, yeah.
Was in this film? Mm-hmm. It was very cool in portraying both Ultron as a character and also the Vision.
Yes.
Let's listen to the second sound clip and see if you can, you know, hear what the Vision says he is.
You think I'm a child of Ultron?
You're not?
I'm not Ultron. I'm not Jarvis. I am.
I looked in your head and saw annihilation.
Look again.
Her silver approval means jack to me.
Their powers, the horrors in our heads, Ultron himself, they all came from the Mind Stone. And they're nothing compared to what it can unleash. But with it on our side.
Is it? Are you? On our side?
I don't think it's that simple.
Well, better get real simple real soon.
I am on the side of life. Ultron isn't.
And that's the initial difference that we're left with. And already right there, we know that we can trust Vision. And we can trust this newly created half-flesh, half-robotic, biometric, whatever you want to call it. We know that we can trust him. Not only that, but we also get that quick visual trust when he picks up Thor's hammer. He is worthy.
Yes.
He is worthy of the Avengers following him, and he is worthy of us as the audience to trust in him and let him do his thing. Now, Michael, did you catch it?
I did.
Good. He says, I am not Ultron. I am not Jarvis. I am. And Michael, that to me is the best allusion to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and good old JC himself, Jesus Quincy Christ, you know, that is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Which is why I'm vying that Vision's the best character of the film.
Arguably. Yes.
But let us divest of that.
Okay.
Let us digest. Now, Wanda says, I looked in your head and I saw annihilation. And that is the same thing that she saw in Ultron's head. So she's already wary. And in the film, you can actually see she's a little frightened, which is a perfectly logical.
That's
natural,
apropos.
Yes, it's very appropriate. Yes, sir. Does Vision agree with Ultron? That's something we have to ask, but it is answered later.
Okay.
And even in this clip, I'll go ahead and just say it. He says, I am on the side of life. Ultron isn't. Obviously, we know there's a difference right there.
Yes.
Ultron is for extinction of human life. Vision, he says it should live to evolve and you know, be alive to do so, you know. But let's go back up. Does Vision agree with Ultron? Again, we'll get to that later. Thor comes in. Their powers, the twins' powers, the horrors in our heads, these visions, these hallucinations in our heads, Ultron himself, they all came from the Mind Stone, that thing that's in Vision's forehead. And it's all those things are nothing compared to the power that it holds, that it can unleash. So we know this thing is very able to destroy the world at the very least.
Yes.
Destroy the Earth at the very least. But then he makes the assumption, but with it on our side. Now, let me ask you, Michael, since you've actually seen that underground jacuzzi hot tub scene from Asgard, does he see that Vision is on his side?
I don't recall them revealing that.
Okay. He obviously sees the stone because, like, he points to it like he recognizes it, obviously, from the Vision. He says, with it on our side. And then old Hawkeye, I believe. Is it Hawkeye or is it Iron Man or Captain America? That chimes in and says, is it on our side? somebody chimes up. And
that was Steve Rogers, wasn't it?
That was Captain America. Yeah. Okay. Steps up and says, is it on our side? And again, vague old Vision.
Oh, this reminds me of Joshua.
He says, I don't think it's that simple. So again, we have to ask, does Ultron, do Ultron and the Vision agree?
Are you with us or with them? Neither.
Oh.
I'm the captain of the host of the Lord's armies. I'm with him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I am for life. And Ultron isn't. Again, putting up that difference. Now, let's listen to this third sound clip. Ultron and Vision, after everything is said and done, finally get some alone time.
Humans are odd. They think order and chaos are somehow opposites and try to control what won't be. But there is grace in their failings. I think you missed that.
They're doomed.
Yes. But a thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. It's a privilege to be among them.
You're unbearably naive.
Well, I was born yesterday.
Oh, I love it. I just love Paul Bettany, and I love James Spader.
And I love good. David Gaddy popping in the chat room and noticing my brand new Force Awakens t-shirt.
Bubba! There you go. All right. They finally have this little chat.
Paul Bettany was perfect for this role. Absolutely perfect. That was every one of his deliveries is...
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, first he says, humans are odd. They think order and chaos are somehow opposites, and they try to control what will not be. So, Michael, we as the audience have to question ourselves, are order and chaos mutually exclusive?
It made me think.
It makes you think. Do we as humans, in order for more security, hold on to things too tightly?
Yes.
When, in fact, we should all take a listen to 38 Special, Hold On Loosely, Baby. Hold On Loosely.
Who's Lucy?
Loosely. Hold on, loosely.
Oh, okay.
Moving on.
Yes, please.
And this is where it all comes in, Michael.
Yes.
But there is grace in their failings. And then he even calls out Ultron. He says, I think you missed that. The Vision is still on the side of life. And it's as if he was trying to not only convince, but convict Ultron. In his missing of the mark, he is kindly and humbly pointing out what Ultron missed.
Have you considered my servant Job?
He simply tells Ultron that he missed the grace. He didn't understand the grace, the room that humans have to make their mistakes and still be, and still be.
Captain America showed it to Wanda.
Yeah,
and so did Hawkeye.
Yeah, that room that we have to.
It doesn't matter.
Occasionally,
what you do in the past.
Fall off the path, but we can get back in that glory.
It
doesn't matter. Now, okay.
What matters is...
Now, Michael, I've been building it up just a little bit.
All right.
Ultron says they're doomed. And what does Vision say?
Yes.
Yes. So technically, yes, the Vision agrees with Ultron in some regard. He says yes. And Wanda kind of foreshadowed that when she looked into Vision's head, and she saw that same annihilation that she saw in Ultron's head. But a thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. The implication being that a thing is beautiful because it simply won't last for so long. And that's why the Vision says it's a privilege to be among these humans.
Mm.
It's a privilege. Oh, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that something isn't beautiful because it lasts. They're not connected.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
it does not follow.
Yes, there's a non sequitur.
Yes, that is a non sequitur.
Yes, sir. So the Vision agrees with Ultron, yes. And this is where he agrees that we do deserve punishment. But the Vision is on the side of life, which means that he will reserve and withhold judgment and punishment.
Ever-loving kindness, long-suffering, wow!
Patience,
grace,
forbearance,
mercy.
Yes, sir. Now, let's just look. All right, now we can get out our swords. Children, Okay. Children, let us turn in our swords to Deuteronomy. Let's check it out in the Old Testament first.
Wait, how come I don't? Okay, go ahead.
Deuteronomy chapter 9.
Yes.
Verses 4 through 6 out of the NILT version.
Uh-huh.
Now, after the Lord your God has done this for you, don't say in your hearts that, the Lord has given us this land because we are such good people. Yes. No. It is only because of the wickedness of the other nations that he is pushing them out of your way.
Yes.
Verse 5, it is not because you are so good or have such high integrity that you are about to occupy their land. The Lord your God will drive these nations out ahead of you only because of their wickedness, not your goodness, their wickedness, and to fulfill the oath that he swore to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Amen.
Verse 6, you must recognize that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land because you are good, for you are not. You are a stubborn people.
Don't hold back.
Yeah, for real. Come on, Mo. Don't hold back.
Yeah.
No.
Spread out.
He says...
Sorry, Mo.
So, Mo says, don't think you're giving this good land because you are good, or getting this good, receiving this good land. Because you are good.
For you are not.
For you are not. You are a stubborn.
That's an emphatic statement.
Yeah. You are a stubborn people. You are a stubborn people. And this Deuteronomy chapters 9 and 10 are really impactful because Moses then begins laying out the sins of the Israelite people even after they're breaking out of Egyptian bondage.
Yes.
He says, look, even when I was up there on Mount Sinai with God himself, you were down here making a golden calf.
It has
and worshiping to it.
It has nothing to do with anything that you do.
Yes.
This is all God's mercy, and love, what?
Grace. Because of those actions, the Israelite people, they deserve to be punished right then and there. Because of our own actions, because of my own actions, I deserve to be punished. But thankfully, I can stand here alive and say, it's not because of me. It's because of the room that God has given me to continue in the Glory Land way. It is because of that grace, because he is withholding his judgment. Now, granted, I'm not going to take that for granted. Got it. Because there will come a time. And, you know, if we take to the book of the Revelation, the Great White Throne Judgment, everyone... there'll be these set of books laid out. There'll be the book of deeds. Look, because of your deeds, you're not worthy of this. But then there's the book of life. And Michael, what gets us into the book of life? Those new clothes?
Putting on Christ.
That wedding banquet suit? That suit of armor?
Sir, how did you get in here without your wedding garments?
Oh, sorry. Let me toss you back out. Yeah. Yep. So let's look to Romans, best book in the whole Bible.
Second best book, yes.
Again, Romans 6:23. We always talk about it. For the wages of sin is death. People of Earth, Avengers, because of your sins, you do deserve to die. And Ultron,
well, you're owed.
Yes, that's the implication. It's not like you've done anything to... Well, you have done. You've worked for it.
You earned it.
Yes, this is what you earned.
You worked hard for that.
Yes. You worked hard to die.
Yes.
This is what you are going to... this is what you should be getting. But the free gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Praise God.
Amen.
But
I like the way Paul puts it in Ephesians.
So do I.
He and I'm going to be reading from the Amplified. Now, Michael, have you...
Do I have turned down the volume of your microphone?
No, you don't. Oh, no. Okay. It's not that kind of amplification.
Oh, okay.
Now, the thing is... Okay, the thing is with the Amplified version...
Ephesians... Oh.
The thing is with this translation is, well, you know, normally when, let's say, a verse in the NIV or the NLT or the KJV, it's, let's say that verse is about seven words long. The Amplified takes that same verse
and amplifies it
and puts like 21 words to it. So, but bear with me here.
It's extremely dynamic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ephesians 2:1-5 from the Amplified version. And you, he made alive when you were spiritually dead and separated from him because of your transgressions and sins, in which you once walked. You are following the ways of the world, influenced by this present age, in accordance with the prince of the power of the air.
The Satan,
the accuser, Ultron, the spirit who is now at work in the disobedient, within the disobedient people, the unbelieving people who fight against the purpose of God. You want to talk about those Ultron Juniors?
Yeah, little Ultrons.
They were originally created to help people, but now they are disobeying that first mission because they are now following, because of that little twist of deception from Ultron.
Ultralights. They're ultralights!
There you go.
Yes.
And which, I'm just going to use this really quick to segue into the our sister show,
The Theonauts!
Latest episode entitled Get Thee Behind Me, Satan. There's a lot of stuff going on with Satan, with the Satan, you know, in this, at least in this reading. And it's, we kind of see that mirrored in these ultralights, these Ultron Juniors.
Yeah.
Because we even as humans were created originally good in the garden. We were called good. We were called very good, actually. But then that little twist of deception, that little click, it just gets to us. Now, continuing with the reading, among these unbelievers, we all once lived in the passions of our flesh. For our behavior governed by the sinful self, indulging in the desires of human nature without the Holy Spirit and the impulses of the sinful mind. We were by nature children under the sentence of God's wrath, just like the rest of mankind. Bring it back to Romans, for all have sinned and fallen short of God's glory. But
when he says all, does he mean all?
Oh, I think so.
All means all. That's all.
But
all
God means, being so very rich in mercy, because of his great and wonderful love with which he loved us.
Wow.
Even when we were spiritually dead and separated from him because of our sins, he made us spiritually alive together with Christ. For by his grace, his undeserved favor and mercy, you have been saved from God's judgment.
The Vision and the Avengers Age of Ultron is an excellent movie for giving a word picture, presenting that thought, but God being so very rich in mercy, so much so we can't understand it. But if you look at it through the eyes of the Vision and what's going on planet Earth, you start to get a better idea, a little bit of a glimpse into just what that means. But God being so very rich in mercy, so very rich, he's not going to run out of it. Mm-hmm. He can't run out of it because of his great and wonderful love with which he loved us. Wow. Even when we were spiritually dead and separated from him because of our sins, he loved us. He made us spiritually alive together with Christ. For by his grace, his undeserved favor and mercy, you have been saved from God's judgment. Put on the clothes. Just put on the clothes. That's all you have to do. You just have to make a decision to walk through that door and be an Avenger, in the case of Wanda, the Scarlet Witch.
I just had an idea.
Okay.
An epiphany. I just had an apostrophe.
Yes.
Going back to Romans, let's go to chapter 12 this time. You know, verse 1, talking about being living sacrifices, and then verse 2, don't be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind stone.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. The mind stone.
Vision. Vision.
That's an acorn.
Michael, you could use that. And then you would just solidify the point that Vision is the best character in this film.
Next to Hawkeye, who is just full of grace. It doesn't matter what you've done. This is, oh my goodness, Brendan, this movie's going, this is in the running right now for me, of the top five. It's at least in the top five, Brendan.
Really? Really?
Oh, come on.
Really?
The grace and the redemption that's contained in this film? You have a hard heart. You need to, I think Moses was talking to you.
Hey, Mo.
What else? What else could be added to that?
Well, we would have to ask our listeners for that.
Yes. What Christian themes did you find in Avengers Age of Ultron? Because there are many. I'm just watching going, oh, man, I want to talk about that. Again and again and again, and sacrifice and doing what's right, and David Gaddy's hot button issue, honor and redemption and humility and being humbled and being lifted up, and all these wonderful things going on in this film. And it is a hot film, and everybody is going to, this movie's never going away. And right now, since it's been released, people all over the world are watching it. So use this opportunity to plant the seeds of the gospel or water the seeds that are already there. We don't know which one we're doing, right? All we know is that God causes the increase. Brendan, anything else, or can we move on to some feedback?
Oh, let's move on.
Got a little voicemail from our brother over there in Texas from
the Theonauts
podcast. Jeremiah Orr calling very early in the morning. You can hear it in his voice.
Hey, guys. Your old pal Jeremiah here. It's like 7:30 in the morning. You guys got me all the way to school. I have to drive now to go teach. It's crazy. But one of my favorite things to do is to listen to Finding Christ in Cinema on my way to teach. And so today I listened to your latest episode on Thor, and I would have to just start out by saying this. Thor shame, Michael and Brendan. Thor shame. That was funny. Anyway, the reason I say that is, number one, Michael, you said that Thor was a silly character to bring to the big screen, but I would rebuttal that and say that Thor was the best out of all of the Marvel characters to bring to the silver screen. And the reason I believe that is, I think that The Lord of the Rings paved the way for movies like this to come and be an amazing spectacle, this whole fantasy genre. It paved the way for Game of Thrones and all those others, but I think Thor specifically is just an amazing concept of a superhero. I don't know. I love him. But anyways, and then the other thing is, Brendan, man, this movie for me was probably the second best Marvel movie that's come out. And specifically for the reasons that you brought up, the whole family situations. Here's my take on this. I think that they have to reach to a certain demographic. So, you know, they have to add the action in there. So, because of course, teenage to middle-aged men are going to watch Thor more than anything else, I believe. And so they have to add that element of action, but in the element of action is the suspense of the brotherly affection, the familiar problem. So anyways, I have people looking at me thinking I'm crazy talking to myself in my car. But I just want to tell you guys, I loved that episode. That was probably one of my favorites. Thor is an amazing movie, and you guys dissected it perfectly. Loki is the best character. Oh, my goodness. So complex. So amazing. I walked out of the theater going, man, you just don't know if Loki's, like, you know, good or evil after this movie, right? And so it's just, it's beautiful. Anyways, thanks, guys. Keep up the good work and spread the gospel.
Amen, brother. And you know that when you do a movie that gets Jeremiah Orr to call in, that you should do more of movies like that.
I'm so glad somebody finally used our brand spanking new voice line.
Just make, you know? So we can make sure it worked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We had and to. So some great points. That movie got him fired up. He loved it. And one thing that I want to say is that I'm tracking with you 1,000% on Loki and his character. I hope they keep him in the Marvel Universe.
Now, they have to. Yeah. I mean, Tom Tiddlywinks is so good. but now I just got to defend myself just a little bit.
Okay.
Yes, the family drama was there. And over the episode, I kind of realized that if I said it wasn't there, then let me take that back and I apologize. But what I will say is that it should have been more. I felt like it just wasn't enough.
And,
you know, that's just me.
Don't feel that I have to qualify or justify a single thing that I said on that episode. Well, okay, moving
right, whatever.
Moving right along.
Hold! Who goes there? It is I.
Patron Saint Philip.
It's a trap.
No, it is not. Akbar. We're going to King Philip's stables. This is a comment that he left on the Thor favorite movie, The Dark World, episode number 70, Thor of Finding Christ in Cinema. Says, hey guys, what a puntastic episode. And truly, the puns have been flying for a whole week now, haven't they? That was an interjection on our part, listeners. Going back to Philip's comment, sounds like you are hankering. Speaking of puns.
See, there's the puns.
Seems like you are hankering for some Tom Hanks. May I suggest Saving Mr. Banks? Yes, you may. If that's not on the list, that needs to be on the list because I want to do that movie, and I'm not watching that movie until we plan on doing it for a show.
Okay.
Because I'm all about Mary Poppins is one of my all-time favorite movies, and Disney, and now I'm a Tom Hankian, right?
There you go.
Okay. And now I am hankering for some Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he continues. He says, I liked it quite a bit. And though inaccurate with some historical facts, it's still a great film. I believe the Doctor Who episode Michael was searching his memory for is The Girl Who Waited. Although saying it involved two different timelines doesn't exactly narrow it down much for Doctor Who, does it? it was nominated for a Hugo Award, but lost to Neil Gaiman's episode from that same season. As far as my favorite of two good Dumbledores, Michael Gambon, appearing in the Christmas special for season 5, that happens to be my favorite episode and the one that made me a full-blown fan of Doctor Who. Brendan, start Doctor Who with Matt Smith. Just start there. So what's that? Season 5. Okay. Just start there and catch up. Okay. Back to Philip. Patron Saint Philip. On to Thor. The Dark World. When I heard that title in my head, it's begging to be sung in 80s hair band style with an air guitar accompaniment. The first Thor film is possibly my favorite Marvel offering. And if you like the score from The Dark World, you need to get Patrick Doyle's score from the first movie. It's outstanding. You guys talked about the scene in Loki's Asgard prison cell where he projected an illusion of his usual regal and imposing figure, which he later dropped to reveal his true broken and disheveled state of being. This reminds me of 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, where God points out that he looks at a person's heart and sees things that man does not see when looking only at the outward appearance. Loki's illusion and seeing it dropped is a great illustration of this truth. Mm-hmm. Also, I would like to get your guys' thoughts on the idea of spectacle from a Christian perspective. What is its value, if any? Is it inherently good, a good or bad thing? This harkens back to the Mad Max episode. Mm. Want to have a conversation on that next episode or...
Yes, Philip, because just because of my theater background, we put a lot of emphasis into studying what Aristotle called The 6 Points of Tragedy. And of course, when he was saying tragedy, he didn't mean, you know, all sad all the time. He just meant of good drama.
Okay.
The 6 points of good drama. And spectacle was one of those points. But since time is running short for us, we will definitely address this on a future episode.
All right. And lastly, as far as Brendan's challenge for me to watch Nightcrawler, I gladly accept.
Yay!
I like the X-Men, and Nightcrawler's teleportation ability is awesome. That would shorten my commute for work big time. Smiley face. Thanks for the show, guys. You're the cat's pajamas. Hashtag
Moe Lad Gidley.
Yes, wonderful feedback. Any others? Any more?
No.
All right. Well, hopefully we garner and generate some feedback on this episode, being as, speaking of spectacle, it was quite the spectacle, I would say. And Brendan, because we have run out of time for this episode, Brendan needs to get to play practice. Let's go ahead and skip Well-Mannered Frivolity and the Lightning Round for this week, and we will revisit those next time. Brendan, what's coming up? Because we've had a change.
Because...
So scratch what we said last episode.
Michael, I can't even right now. Michael, okay, I was all excited to get back into the Wizarding World.
Yes?
With Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince for next week. However, because...
Well, there's a major, major event coming up later on in the month to be ready for.
Next week,
yes,
instead of Harry Potter 6, Half-Blood Prince, next week we're going to go ahead and jump into The Nightmare Before Christmas.
All right.
Get us into the Halloween spirit.
Yes.
Now, Michael, please explain why.
October 21st of 2015, Doc Brown, Marty McFly, and Jennifer, future McFly, all land in Hill Valley... 2015. That's Wednesday. That is Wednesday. Our show is on Thursday, the very next day. We are going to go back to the future with part two. Right on the day after they landed, and we can have a little nice little comparison between their 2015 and our 2015, and some exciting things. I don't know what kind of Christian themes we're going to find in this film. But I'm just excited to compare 2015s. Yeah, I think it must be. And listeners, if you disagree with me, if this is something that, what? Who cares about that? Then by all means, let me know and we'll put our schedule back. But if you think
Please.
That God expects us to talk about Back to the Future Part 2 the same week, you know, a mere 24 hours after the fact, I'm all with you.
So what you're saying is that we should be on that day, on the day we record our show, we should be reading headlines of this old man and young doctor and young man,
man
and his girlfriend.
I wish we could do the show on Wednesday.
Roaming around town.
Hey, already David Gaddy in the chat room says that's brilliant. And you know,
don't encourage him, David.
Older folks such as me, we have our vote. Is weighs more than yours.
Whatever.
Anyway, and so then after that.
So then next, the week after that, it will be the Halloween episode. And after some very sly persuasion from Mr. David Gaddy.
In the chat room.
In the chat room right now, we will be doing The Shining.
Oh.
We're not thinking about it anymore. It is definite.
A good Kubrick film.
How about it? Lord willing, and the creeks don't rise.
Yes, 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 yes. This is all subject to his approval and everything.
Which I got a feeling he does not approve of Back to the Future Part 2.
I know he does. I know it. Because I watched it on a whim the other day and saw it right there. I said, whoa! It was the burning bush of cinema. Hey, it doesn't matter what happens, friends. It doesn't matter if we change our schedule. All that matters is that Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Thursday, Lord willing, at around 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and to proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Now, to witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational ministry, including all 75 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, Brendan's Monday Movie Review, and links to our social media profiles, visit our website at christincinema.com. If you don't care about any of that stuff, but you want to communicate with us, you can just send us an email the old-fashioned way, by post. FCC@GCTnetwork.com.
By post. You can call us up on the brand spanking new hotline that we have.
That, I don't understand.
That Jeremiah of the...
Oh, of the...
Theonauts!
Podcast.
Just used this past week. You can call us at 507-407-GCTN. Or we do have a backup number in case
that's
of emergency.
That's just as fascinating as the first 89 times you told me that.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to listen to the podcast, you can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn Radio. Just search them all. Not for the air getting to it. Not for... Okay, whatever. Search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
I just knocked him off.
You are a sad, strange little man.
He just deflated me.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including the Theonauts, and coming up very soon, our worship show, tune into the official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
Not if you're going to cut me off.
Inconceivable.
And that is a wrap.
I don't understand.
Potato.
Oh, no, it's...
Potatoes.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Are you sure this is loud enough?
Yeah. Let me hear you.
Are you sure? Are you sure? Yeah. Are you? Huh?
Yeah.
I feel a little distant.
You are quite distant.
I need to be distant, though.
No, that's good.
Okay.
Well, here.
Okay.
Here I come. I'm over here.
Okay. Sound engineer to the rescue.
Engineering sound. Go.
Hey. Hey. Okay, that's better. Yeah, okay.
Hey.
Whew.
All right, here we go. Recording still.
Yay. Pizza.
Oh, pizza.